This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
Hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's The Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and are you wallowing in the December spending shame swamp? Oh, you are not alone. You know, it's just because I love all my friends and family that I bought myself a nice recliner for them to watch me relax in. It makes me a better man. You know, for them. Hey, if you're feeling some January misery from your credit card statement, fear not. To help you overcome your debt woes, we welcome today from Budget Mama, Jessie Fearon. In our headlines, student loan kingpins Navient are forced to forgive $1.7 billion in student loan debt. Is there more to come? We'll ask that question, and we'll throw out the Haven Lifeline to Brian with an interesting HSA question, and then I'll tackle some transaction trivia. And now, two guys who have spent years dragging themselves out of the financial shame swamp to teach you how to do the same, it's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
Hey there, Stackers. Welcome to Wednesday. You're halfway there. I'm Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter, welcoming you to the top of the hill, which is this week. It's all downhill from here, peeps. And to celebrate the fact that we are into phase two of this week, we welcome Mr. OG across the card table from me.
What? Shaking bacon.
How are you, brother? You have been sick lately, which is why we have the double wide card table today.
That is correct, sir. And I'm wearing my hoodie just to be safe.
Yes, Abs, thank you. You know, today we are continuing our debt rehab month. We had earlier on Aaron Sky Kelly, who was awesome about teaching you how to get out of debt. But you know, OG, getting out of debt is just step one. Getting a budget together is step two. And we've got the woman who knows how to do that, Jessie Fearon.
Spending plan.
Yes. Jessie's a woman who felt a lot of guilt because she should have known, like a lot of us, should have known how to do money well and felt a bunch of shame and figured it out and got her act together. And today she's going to make sure that you don't have to have any shame and you can get yours together too if you're sitting where she was and I think where I definitely was at one point and maybe a bunch of other stackers out there. But first, man, we got a great headline. Some people are hallelujahing today because they don't have to pay their student loans. That and much more. But first, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Stackers, controlling your money on a day-to-day basis comes down to two things. Number one, great communication, either with yourself or with a partner. And by great communication, what do I mean? I mean, sitting down with your app of choice and putting together your strategy based on what you spent the week before. It's super easy, a 20-minute meeting a week. You look through your expenses and then you plot out, what are you going to do next week? And you know what? That might seem little, but the big things stem from that. And if you have an app that keeps that in front of you, that helps make it even easier. And the app Cheryl and I use is Monarch Money. We've been using it now for about a year. As you may know, I've used lots of different solutions, and this is by far the one I've stuck with the longest. It helps Cheryl and I collaborate. We can talk about our financial goals. For us, it's travel. We're also adding to our house. We have a goal in a few years to really work on our lawn as well and just make it a pretty place to live. But the travel piece, as you know, if you've listened to me for any amount of time, that's a big one. And what's cool is I can put our financial independence goals and our journey up right next to our budget, because everything at Monarch is very intuitive. It is very customizable. So what the heck is Monarch? You're sitting there wondering to yourself, aren't you? Person I just made up. Yes. Let me tell you what it is. It's an all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you comprehensive view of all your accounts, your investments, your transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track your progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, Stackers, because you're a stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. Got to have the slash Benjamins to get the extended 30-day free trial so you can see that you'll like it as much as I do. How does it work? Well, it's very intuitive. It has a simple, intuitive design that makes it easy to set up, customize, and use. You can collaborate with your partner, family, or your financial advisor. What's cool is you can invite all these people to your account at no extra cost, so you can collaborate, and everybody gets their own login info, and everybody gets a joint view of your finances. And as I mentioned earlier, it's customizable, and best yet, it's ad-free privacy you can trust. No ads. You're not being marketed. When I had other apps that were free, I got marketed all the time. Well, not only do they not do that, they also don't sell your data to third parties. After trying out Monarch for myself and using it for about a year now, on a daily basis, I totally get why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, because you're a stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. That's Monarch Money, monarchmoney.com/Benjamins for your extended 30-day free trial. All right, the budget mama, Jesse Fearon, upstairs. So let's get to our headlines.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our stacking Benjamins headlines.
Our first headline, student loan company Navient to forgive $1.7 billion with a B in debt in a settlement. Student loan company Navient has agreed to forgive $1.7 billion in private student loans and will pay $95 million in restitution after a lawsuit accused the company of steering struggling borrowers into more debt, officials announced Thursday. So the first thing here, OG, is we got to know the difference between public student loans and private student loans. These were private student loans. So how are people going to recognize those on their statement? How will they know if maybe they got a shot here?
I think you can just check to see whether or not you're paying interest. If it's a subsidized loan, that means you're not paying interest while you're using the benefit. Unsubsidized means interest goes from day one. So those would be the two types of federal loans. And if you've done any refinancing or if you had to borrow money from a bank to go to college, that's obviously a private loan.
That is a private loan. Yeah, I think that's a big clue. If you've got the word subsidized or unsubsidized in the loan, it's a government sponsored loan. So this clearly is not that. That also means, OG, that this is probably a higher interest rate loan. If you're taking out private loans, those generally are at a higher interest rate. So this is even more hallelujah for people. But it also, I think, is a lesson for people that are on their way to college. If you have to take out student loan debt at all, try to get the government student loan programs versus going right to a bank. And I say that because long, long, long time ago, whole different world for student loan debt, but my parents almost made that mistake.
You want to start with the federal side first, you know, take advantage of all those programs before anybody starts crying for Navient, because I'm sure there's a lot of Navient supporters out there that are like, this is baloney,
right? This company that's been wonderful toward us.
This is malarkey. I did some quick back of the envelope calculation, $1.6 trillion of student loans presently. And Navient, of course, they don't own all of the market, but they have some of it. And the interest for the year, generally speaking, on the student loans, if you've got a pretty reasonable interest rate, is roughly $80 billion.
The interest is $80
billion. So Navient gave back a $1.8 billion of that, or 1.7, whatever you said. So what is that? Like 2 weeks worth of interest?
Yeah.
Go away.
Sounds like a big number to you and me, but are you trying to say that debt companies aren't your friend?
Well, now they can.
Is that what you're trying to say?
They can friend you on Facebook and TikTok DM you. They passed that law now. They can do that. They can do a little dance and be like, you owe us money. You owe us some money. Send us some money. We're sending you to court, you know.
My parole officer does the same thing. Everybody's getting into this.
Have you seen the Allstate commercial? The new premiered during the Sugar Bowl with the, you know, mayhem. And he's like, I'm the latest TikTok craze. And he's like doing the dance on the side of the road.
Oh, no.
I love that guy.
And the guy smashes into the garbage truck.
Of course he does.
He's like, he goes, this is going to get hundreds and hundreds of likes. Or maybe he said tens and tens of likes. He might have said tens and tens.
Tens and tens sounds better.
Tens of likes.
New York Attorney General Letitia James claimed in a lawsuit filed simultaneously with the Navient settlement that since 2009, the company deceived thousands of financially struggling customers with federal debt so that they would opt for expensive long-term forbearance plans instead of informing them of more affordable options. It just reminds me, OG, of like Friday happy hours when Doug tries to convince us that us picking up the beers again at the Sizzler is a good idea.
It just, I'm looking out for your well-being. It makes you feel better giving back to the community.
I mean, if you're in the business of lending money and you've got a pretty good track record of eventually collecting it, you would want to, you know, have that person pay interest for a much longer time, right? Like you'd be like, you probably can't afford this. Why don't we just pay it later?
If I'm sitting in a board meeting at Navient, my question isn't how do I get people to use our service less? It's how do I make sure that we maximize profit?
Yeah.
And so thinking that any debt strategy that's created by a debt service company that they send you in the mail that I get incessantly, even though I get it for debt I don't have. And it's so frustrating to see that, hey.
Well, I use your name a lot, by the way.
that's exactly it.
Have you checked your credit report lately?
It made it so much easier for me when I memorized his social security number.
I know.
It just speeds things up.
473-99-2211.
And now our whole audience is Googling that.
I don't think they're ever gonna, I feel bad for the person who has that one.
Who has that number.
So, we just sold them down the river. Yeah.
OG just gave away my social. It's like I just picked random numbers, people.
Oh, you've got an attorney and retainer. You're fine.
But yeah, the problem isn't the shareholders being rewarded at Navient. The problem is the deceptive tactics in which they use to get people to opt into these programs. So yeah, screw them. They should get their hand slapped and lose a few bucks.
Well, the genius thing that Navient did was they didn't have to declare any wrongdoing in this either. So they gave up 2 months of interest. And of course, they didn't have to say that they did anything wrong.
Yes. Without that's accepted. What do they call it? The accepted waiver and consent or something like that, where it's like, I admit nothing, but here's $2 billion.
This is like when Ohio State puts sanctions on themselves for NCAA violations.
This, which happens very frequently. Yeah,
this actually sounds like one of those Real Men of Genius commercials. Like, here's to you, Mr. Student Loan Debt Extender.
Yeah.
Mr. Debt Extender. Remember those commercials?
Real Men of Genius.
Nobody else does, but.
Yes. Well, for those of you that don't know, this is one of my favorites of all time. This is fantastic.
Budweiser presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Footlong Hot Dog Inventor.
Mr. Footlong Hot Dog Inventor.
When conventional wisdom said no one could make a hot dog longer than 6 inches, you dared to dream.
Dared to dream.
You knew the limitations of a regular-sized hot dog bun, and you ignored them.
Can't stop me now.
You made a 10-inch wiener, and people cheered.
Oh.
But you weren't satisfied. You said, wait, I think I can still give you 2 more inches.
I want it.
So this bud's for you, Mr. Hot Dog Hero, because you gave every single one of us our fondest wish, a bigger wiener.
The choir at the end is the part that gets me.
Oh my God, I wish we were that funny.
the ad people that come up with that stuff is just so good. So good. Naviat needs a better PR team, I think, OG. I think that's it.
They need better morals.
Now you're reaching.
Better executives, a better leadership team, not crappy salespeople.
Hey, and speaking of having some morals, you know, when you're getting out of debt, let's say that you do get this amazing settlement and now you don't have this debt anymore. First thing you do with that money, OG, now all of a sudden you have maybe $1,000 a month that was going to student loans, no longer going to student loans.
Oh, the first thing that you should do. So you got $1,000 of cash flow, you're saying, cash reserve, and buy yourself something nice. No, I'm kidding. Probably shouldn't do that. I think that you have to kind of just do the normal order of stuff that you were doing before. If you don't have your emergency fund, you have to build that. If you have your emergency fund, but you still have debt, then what a great opportunity to continue to put this extra money, this found money, to pay that debt down a little bit faster. And if it's purely savings, well, then you've got all the places that you can, you can put there, you know, with your workplace plans and whatnot. So don't let it just seep into your bank account.
Cause it will.
It will 100% get spent.
And you will immediately spend it. And then 6 months from now, you'll feel like it's just part of your budget and you won't know where it went.
Yep.
Don't do that. You know, we have back in December, we did an order of operations episode for people that are new to the show. What are the things that you should do first, second, third with your money? We'll link to that in the show notes. And of course, our phenomenal newsletter, the 201, stackingbenjamins.com/201. So that you can go back and listen to that one. If you're wondering, what do I do first? Speaking of do first, a guy's family members thought that he should be giving some money to his family. Listen to this. Guy who won $5.6 million in a lottery refused to give any to his family. Did you see this?
No.
The piece says, fighting over money can bring out the very worst in some people, whether they're distant acquaintances or your closest relations. And things can get incredibly heated when there's a golden jackpot full of millions up for grabs. A recent lottery winner.
How much did he win?
Hit it big, got a whopping $5.6 million in October.
Not bad.
Shared what happened to it. He turned to the AITA subreddit, if you know what that is. We've talked about that subreddit before, for their verdict on whether or not he was a jerk because he decided not to give his family any of the money. Instead, listen to what he did. He decided to do the smart thing. He and his wife are both 24 years old. Every month they buy a lottery ticket for fun. They won big. They won after the, of course, lump sum fee and taxes of $5.6 million. They paid down all their debt, student loans, house, car loans. They had about $5 million left. So they had $600,000 in debt. In case you don't know, 70% of lottery winners go broke after a few years. So me being in the financial sector, I didn't want to be in that 70% and never have to work again. So what we did was invest $3 million in a combination of mutual funds, REITs and preferred stock funds for a very steady, hands-off, extremely low-risk, solid return approach. With the $2 million left, we ended up buying a $5 million apartment complex that cash flows and will give a high return with low risk. When I told my family, I thought the first reaction would be exciting for me and how we were financially responsible with the money. But that started talk about a huge family trip, how I was paying for all their debt and more. I explained $5 million is a lot, but not enough where I'd be giving it away to family, and they got mad. They said I wasn't welcome in this family anymore.
Wow.
I shouldn't talk to them again.
And then I said, screw you guys. I don't need you anyway. And I got on my private jet and I went home.
And that was it.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the reasons why you wouldn't tell anybody that you won the lottery.
Yeah, they asked
for this particular reason.
They asked a dude who's a big time pot stirrer in our area of the internet, Sam Dogan, Sam from, of course, Financial Samurai. And when I saw Sam's name in here, I'm like, oh boy, Sam's going to say, because I know Sam very well, and I thought he was just going to stir the pot. But Sam actually said, the first thing you do is keep it a secret.
Yeah.
You don't tell anybody. But if word gets out that you got it, I mean, don't you give them, maybe give them 15 grand each just to.
Where does it stop? It would never be, oh, you only gave me 15 grand. You right, got 5 right. million. Yeah. So it's a, if you give a mouse a cookie situation.
Yep. Nope. Sorry. Sorry, Charlie. Especially if it's 5 million. I mean, if it's 400 million.
It's a whole different story.
Then, yeah, then you can go, okay, here's a car for everybody and all your debt paid off. And
well, for people that are wondering why we're, I think, all on the side of not giving money to family, $5 million sounds like a ton of money. But if you use the 4% rule, which is no longer the 4% rule, I don't know what rule it is anymore.
3.93%
rule. Yeah, but let's call it the 4% rule. That's $40,000 a year. And don't get me wrong, that's good money.
I'm going to challenge your math just a skosh on that one. Just beep, boop, bop. Let me back the truck up. Beep, beep,
4%
beep.
On $1 million?
But he won 5 million.
I know. I'm about to do the math. You're cutting to the chase.
Wow.
So on a... On
because 4 times 5 is so much more challenging than 4 times 1 times 5?
Walk us through it, Joe. Go slowly.
That's right. That's right.
Wait a second.
He wants to conservatively live a very nice lifestyle. I mean, but that lifestyle of $200,000 a year is not the lifestyle that I think people think when they think $5 million. I think a lot of people think $5 million, think, wow. Now, $200,000 also is not garbage, but being able to guarantee that you got $200,000 forever without any worry.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things he could say here is like, listen, I know that you think this is a lot of money, but I'm 23 and my goal is to double this every couple of years, you know, every 6 or 7 years, kind of using the rule of 72. And so he should double by the time he's 30, 37, 44, and 51, let's say.
Imagine.
So if he doubles it 4 times, he's like, all right, I can take care of it, but you got to give me some time. You know, I can hook you up, but I'm going to hook you up on the back end.
Hook up everybody.
I got to go from 5 to 10 to 20 to 40 to 80.
See, that's a good discussion.
You know,
that's a great discussion.
I ain't going to make it until then unless you get my car paid off.
Yeah.
It's no different than if you have accumulated a whole bunch of money. If you're not in the same ballpark as your family, regardless of what the number is, if you've got 5 million and the rest of your family has 500,000, or if you have 500,000 and the rest of your family has 5,000, you're going to be rich, the rich one. And how come the rich guy doesn't pay? It's like, it's $500,000. You know, it's not zero, but you know, it's not a lot either. It's $1 million. It's like, how come the rich guy doesn't pay? It's like $1 million is a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money in the grand scheme. You know what I mean? So yeah. You have to be careful about all of this, regardless of whether or not it's just a sudden wealth thing or if it's just something you accumulate.
Which is frustrating because we talk about why money's taboo. And now we're talking about the backside of that, right? We're talking about, hey, we should talk about money more often. And now we're getting to the ugly side of being a little bit more public. I don't know. Tough to know what to do. Love to hear your comments. Let's chat about it in our Facebook group, The Basement, stackingbenjamins.com/basement. We'll get you right to our Facebook group. Love to hear if you won $5.6 million, what would you do? Coming up next, Jesse Fearon, one of my favorite people. And I know I say that a lot, one of my favorite people, but Jesse is an amazing person who knew quite a bit about money, but her money was not following her values. And I think that speaks for a lot of us. So how was she able to bring things into alignment for her and her family? Well, she has a brand new book out called Getting Good with Money. We're going to have some lessons from Jesse on today's show. But I think as a good lead-in, I think, Doug, you might have not just some trivia, but some thoughts on getting honest about money.
Interesting, Joe. Whenever you lead into my trivia segment, you never say, well, here's one of my favorite people, Doug, with his trivia. I never get that. All the guests are your favorite people. OG and I, we don't hear that phrase so much.
It's implied. It's implied. Implied. Yeah, implied well, love.
Once in a while, I need a hug. Okay.
Oh, are we doing a hug right now?
Yes. I need a little warmth.
How about that?
See, that's once in a while. That's all I need.
Yes. Need a back rub?
Yes. little bit, a little lower. Yeah, there it is. Okay. All right, here we go. Hey there, stackers. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. And yeah, because we're friends here, I got to confess, I went overboard on the holidays this year. I got Joe's mom a disco ball for the bathroom. I got Joe a fog machine for the dramatic entrances he always insists on. And as I told you earlier, the recliners, really, it's for everyone. Though, of course, I always get here first. And when I get up from it, I follow international maritime law and I say, dibs! And then just to be safe, I sneeze on it. But I mean, really, the chair is for everyone. And even worse, I put all this holiday generosity on my credit card. Jeez, it was the first time my statement had to be delivered in a binder. With all these purchases, it got me wondering, what credit card company is used in the most transactions each year? So what card does Santa use? It's probably that one. But we're going to find out as soon as I make sure no one's playing with Joe's fog machine. Oh, gee, get your hands off it. You're going to break it again.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Hey there, stackers. I'm holiday philanthropist and reclined mastermind Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. This foot massager I got for Gertrude is really hitting the right spot, if you know what I mean. That particular purchase is thanks to my Victoria's Secret card. But as for today's trivia question, who's in charge for the most transactions on Earth? While Chase has the biggest market share, my question was really around transactions. And that prize would go to American Express with 5.66 billion transactions in 2019. And now, to help you stay on budget when you're spoiling your loved ones, let's say hello to Jessie Fearon.
And here she comes down the stairs to the basement.
Well, hi.
Jessie Fearon is here. It's about time we got you back here. How have you been? Yeah, how are your holidays?
Good. It has been a long time. I'm doing well. How about you, Joe? Well,
I'm also doing well, but I heard you survived the Nutcracker, Mom.
Almost. It's this weekend. We're in rehearsals and if I survive, well, that's a big if.
I was telling you before we hit record that that's where all my hair went. So good luck to you.
Yes, I know. It's like might need some help.
If you're one of those crazy parents listening to this, I just have two words, back off.
Yes.
Maybe one word, relax. That might be.
Yes. Yes. Take a chill pill because it's quite intense.
It's quite intense. Well, your life was quite intense and you open up your awesome book with this enough is enough moment. And it's funny because we ask people all the time about their moment. And most people we talk to, and it's not everybody, and you also say this in the book, it's not everybody, but most people have this moment, this turning point where they're like, I can't do this anymore. It just has to change. And yours was March 3rd, 2013.
Yes.
paint me that picture, Jessie. Tell me what was going on that day.
We were pregnant with our second child. We literally began 2012 pregnant and ended it pregnant. We did not plan that, but that's sometimes how life works. So I was trying to go through our money and trying to figure out, how we were going to be able to survive buying diapers for two kids under the age of two and formula. And
unbelievably expensive, by the way.
Yes.
It's like, I thought I was buying in those days, and it's been a long time, and now inflation now. Well, even inflation since you did it.
Yes.
I thought I was buying gold.
Yes, absolutely. And and then some babies just require more diapers than others, And so I was trying to figure out what it was going to look like from a financial standpoint. And at that point, we had pretty much nothing in savings anymore. There had been a huge emergency that had happened just a couple of months before that fateful March day that had wiped out our savings. So we had pretty much nothing in savings. We were living on a $47,000 a year income. And I was trying to figure out how we were going to just make all of it work. And I very quickly realized it was not going to work. Our debt was eating up so much of my husband's income. And so we were faced with some options of either I'm going back into the corporate world, or we're going to have to make some drastic changes and sacrifices in order to keep me home with the kids. Because if I did go back to work, the majority of my paycheck was going to go towards paying for childcare for two kids under the age of two.
Yeah. You know, obviously both you and your husband, Pat, both felt the struggle, but you felt this personal struggle, like knowing that you could on one hand go back to work, but knowing that that might be futile, but also you're the person with the accounting degree in the family.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It was really hard for me to sit there and see these numbers, and I kept trying to make them work. Like, you know, every accountant knows what I mean. Like, you're sitting there, you just plug in the numbers. You're like, they got to work. You got to make it work. And it just was not working. I mean, you know, math doesn't lie. It wasn't going to work. We did not have the resources available to be able to continue the way that we were living and on that one income, especially once our second child would be born. And I honestly felt like a failure. I was like, how did this happen? How is it that I can manage, you know, a business's money, but I can't manage my own personal finances? You know, and what is my husband going to think because I have failed us because I can't seem to get the money to work?
You talk about how the recipe for getting good with money is 20% math and 80% behavior.
Absolutely.
You'd obviously had the big problem before. You talked about you had the emergency and that required a lot of money, but obviously that's not it. That's not all of it. The behavior also had to, what behaviors needed to change for you and Pat and for your family?
One, we both needed to come together as like a couple and decide like, what is the most important thing here? Because with managing money, we weren't actually managing money. We were just sort of living life and like spending money here, spending money there. Oh, we need this, we buy that. And then it's like, well, do we save money? Well, sure, we're supposed to save money. So here's, you know, $100 to savings, but is that going to be enough? Like, how much should we have in savings? It was like all these things we just didn't know. We had no concept of what, you know, a healthy financial life was supposed to really look like. And that was sort of the problem, is that when the medical emergency happened, where it wiped out our savings, like we had savings, thankfully, but we had no strategy for that savings account. So we didn't even know if that savings account had originally even been enough money to survive with. And obviously it turned out that it was enough to cover one emergency, but it would never have covered more than that. And that was really our problem, is that we had to get together as a couple to figure out, okay, how do we do this together? And what is our plan? What do we need to stop doing? What do we need to give up? And, you know, obviously the easy answer to that is you have to give up overspending. You have to give up the mindless buying of this and the buying of that, you know, which is really, really hard. But it's also really hard to decide that you're going to pay off your debts, like you're going to live without credit cards, which is something we had to do because we were relying on our credit cards way too much. And that was costing us so much money in the form of obviously interest in carrying those balances.
Sure,
and then,
yeah.
You know, and then we had my Tahoe loan and we had my student loans. And so it's like, how do we tackle these things? Because all of these things were eating up a significant portion of my husband's income every single month. And that's not even including the mortgage we had.
But the exciting piece about this that I love is that the two of you, you know, have been married, you have a family. And really, for the first time, I feel like, as I'm reading, I don't know if it's the first time, but it felt like the first time based on what you said. And you talk about how to do this later in the book. But I felt like you two are having these talks about what you value. Like, it's not about what you're spending and what you're going to get. You're going to give up crap you don't value now, and you're going to stick to the stuff you do value. I feel like that would have been kind of an exciting time to kind of grab control. Did it feel exciting or did it suck?
Both. It was, you know, it kind of sucked because it was really hard because we were like, me and my husband both have dominant personalities and we're both control freaks. So that sometimes doesn't work very well. And so it's really hard because, you know, we're both from divorced households as well. So it's sometimes it's hard because all we heard growing up was fighting in the terms of like a husband and wife relationship. So we heard a bunch of fighting. And so it's sometimes hard for us, you know, not to go to that space of the combativeness and no, I'm going to get my way. No, you can't control me. That type of thing. So we had to work through a lot of those issues as well. So that part really sucked because it was kind of like, okay, well, he wanted this, I wanted that. But through the conversations, we were able to actually find out, okay, what do we value as a family?
Yeah.
What is the most important to us that, you know, at the end of our lives, when we're on our deathbed, what is it that we're going to be looking back on and being like, yes, this we did right. Whatever that is, what is that going to look like? And from there, we started trying to take those little steps to actually make that happen. And for us, it was definitely, you know, our family and keeping our, you know, our family unit together. And for, you know, for us, we didn't want, at the time that I had this revelation back in 2013, my husband was working a job where his shift changed all the time. You know, sometimes he's working the graveyard shift. Sometimes it was normal, but for the most part, it was all over the place. So the burden of getting kids to and from, you know, childcare would have fallen squarely on my shoulders, as well as, you know, cooking dinner, getting kids into bed, all of that. And we both did not want me to have to bear that alone. We didn't want me to have to be running around frantic. I live in Metro Atlanta and traffic is just horrible all the time, for whatever reason. And so we knew that I was going to be fighting traffic to get to the childcare center, fighting traffic to get to work, and then fighting traffic again from work to the childcare center, then from there back home, and then having to do all of this over and over again. We both were like, that's not a life that, you know, I wanted. That wasn't a life he wanted. And that wasn't a life we wanted for our kids. And so from there, it was, okay, how do we change this? Because we are clearly living in a way of, you know, doing things that we don't actually value. So right. How do we get back to this of what we really, truly value and that we want for our family?
Did you disagree a lot?
Initially, yes. Yeah. We still disagree. And there's still, we still have disagreements all the time. We just don't have the blowout, drag out fights that we used to.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think you get to the point when you have these discussions more often that the blowout fight doesn't make sense anymore.
Exactly. It's not productive. There have been times even now where if we start recognizing that we're getting a little too heated, like we're just like, okay, you know what? We're going to shelve this and we'll come back to it later. I think the worst advice we ever got when we were first married was you should never go to bed angry. I think that was actually terrible advice because like I took that as like, no, we have to resolve this
now.
Exactly. Yes. No matter how heated things got, it was like, no, we have to stick it through and we got to resolve it now. But sometimes it is better to just say, okay, this is getting a little too much. I'm going to go to bed. We'll talk about this, you know, tomorrow after work. We'll talk about this then. And that's what we'll do. We'll just be like, okay, this is going to be a conversation for tomorrow. And that's been very helpful to us.
Jesse's like, we'll talk about this tomorrow. I'm going to bed. You can sleep outside in a tent.
I'm like, yes, 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 yes. I'm like, the kids' treehouse that you built, you can go sleep in that.
And then we'll see who's right, Mr. Pat.
Exactly.
I know how marriage works. I've been on the other end of that. But some things, you know, convenience, you said, was also a surprise when you were digging into your money, like even Amazon Prime, like you had no idea how much money you were spending on Amazon Prime. Yes. So you got rid of some of the convenience just so you could grab hold. I thought that was really cool.
Absolutely. Because that's what I think happens for a lot of us is like sort of autopilot kicks in and, you know, we're just buying things, you know, just because they become a habit. And for me, it was more convenient to buy things on Amazon Prime and have them shipped to my house than me having to load up my fussy kids into the car seats that they hated and look like the terrible mom in the parking lot, like holding her kid down as she's trying to buckle them in, you know, and like, so just, you know, it was a lot more convenient.
Just as an aside from my experience of my twins, Jesse, that you can always tell people in the parking lot who don't have kids and people in the parking lot who do, because people in the parking lot who do are like, oh, I feel so bad for her.
Yes. And like, let me take your cart back to the, to the little carousel over here.
Right. And people who don't are like, she's a horrible mother.
Yes.
Like she is just, oh my goodness. She's the dragon lady.
Oh yeah. There was a couple of incidences that I had with people who were like, oh my God.
So backing back up to values for just one more second, because there's probably a lot of people listening to this, as you know, who are like, I'm kind of struggling with what's important to me and what's not. And you actually have an idea in the book for how to get past that point. So if I'm struggling with what's really important for me, what do I do?
One of the best exercises I think that there is to picture yourself 5 years in the future. Pick today's date and put it 5 years in the future, and then write down how old you're going to be on this day 5 years in the future. If you're married, how old your spouse is going to be. If you have children, how old your children will be. And then from there, ask yourself, when I'm this age, when my husband is this age, when my kids are this age, you know, or if you aren't married and don't have kids, pick other people in your life that are, you know, your siblings, your friends, whoever are important to you and involved in your life, put them down and ask, well, hey, what do I want my life to look like 5 years from now? Do I still want to be doing the same things I'm doing today? Do I still, you know, want to have the same things that I'm doing today? Where do I want to go 5 years in the future? Like, what do I hope that it's going to look like? And then pull it back and ask yourself, what are the actions that I can take today to start getting me towards that 5 year in the future self?
I love that as a beginning point, because when I was a financial planner, and it's been a long time now since then, But when I try to get people to imagine like retirement and some of these things way down the road, people would really struggle with that. But 5 years is much easier, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, because we could picture it better. Like we all know now that like 5 years is really just a drop in the bucket. It just goes by so fast, you know, whereas if we're trying to pick out, you know, something 20 or 30 years in the future, it's kind of hard. It's like, oh, we got plenty of time. We got plenty of time.
Yeah. I was even thinking, even if you're 18 listening to this, like you're like, okay, but you know, college or apprenticeship or whatever you're doing, like 5 years from now, even at 18, I had those definite 5 year things. You talk about there's four different money struggles, four different personalities, archetypes of people, and you really got to know who you are. And I was hoping we could go through these and explain who they are. And then, you know, I'll ask you for maybe a quick piece of advice for each one of them. So you start off with a person called the floater. Who's the floater?
That is someone living paycheck to paycheck, actually, or really more accurately, they're living paycheck in 4 days until paycheck, which I have been multiple times in my life. You know, and I would say that my practical advice for someone who is caught in that paycheck to paycheck cycle, it is just really getting clear on what you value. You know, where you want your money to go, you know, what's a priority expense to you and what is not, and to write down your budget, just use the money you have currently sitting in your checking account and, you know, get your calendar out, look when your next payday is, take the amount that you currently have sitting in your checking account, and then subtract out every expense you have coming up until the next payday. And then once it's payday, you just add in your paycheck amount and do the same thing all over again. Whatever expenses you have coming up for the next time frame between your next pay period, subtract those out, and then just keep that budget, that piece of paper on your notes app and your phone, whatever you do, spreadsheet, whatever, keep it right in front of you and make it a habit, set an alarm in your phone, a reminder in your phone, whatever you need to do to check in with your money every single day. Because when you're a floater, like money is just sort of like all over the place. And the only way to make it not be all over the place is to actually look at your money every single day until you finally get into that habit of paying attention to where your money is going.
Do you think that this person more than anybody is the person that needs more of an envelope style budget? They need to know where every single dollar is headed ahead of time of the four archetypes?
Absolutely, they do. Because like I said, money's just sort of floating around you. Yeah. You don't really know what your money is doing. And the only way to really get clear is to come up with a process that works for you, you know, switching to cash instead of, you know, a debit or a credit card, which is really hard. It's really hard to switch to cash. But that was so helpful, especially in our early days of trying to regain control over our money and figure out where it was going. Having that cash is just sort of a natural boundary because, you know, if you go into the checkout and your total is, you know, $103, but you only have a $100 bill with you, well, you've got to put something back because you don't have $3 to pay the rest. But if you have your debit or credit card, you're just going to swipe it and move on.
And that comes from something in the future and you don't even really know what it is yet.
Exactly.
And actually, that's a good point too, because if you only have $100, you make a value-based decision right then. You look at the things on that conveyor belt and you go, excuse me, can we take that one back off?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And it does. And it forces you to have that conversation with yourself. Like, do I really need this? Do I really want that? Can I live without that for a while?
Right.
And those are really important things, you know, especially for people who like me, who have struggled with boundaries, which most floaters do. It's very helpful.
Yeah. For me, the wine stays, the light bulbs. So we're in a light lit room. Those go.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I'm kidding. Second is who's the daredevil?
That is someone who lives without an adequate savings plan and savings account. And I say those kind of separately because, as I mentioned before, me and my husband, we actually had a savings account with a pretty good chunk of change, or at least we thought it was a pretty good chunk of change. And we thought it was fine because we were one of the only people back then that we knew of that had a savings account outside of our parents. Okay. Like our parents had savings accounts, but like anybody our age didn't really have a savings account. And if they did, it was like $100, you know, so we had money in savings and we felt like, okay, we've got this going on. But the reality was, is that we didn't have a plan in place for that account. And so we didn't know if we had enough money in that account. And so it took one emergency to completely wipe it out. And then we were left like struggling, like, oh my God, we don't know what to do now. Whereas, you know, back in 2019, the October of 2019, we had quite the October. We had three major emergencies happen that month back to back. And our emergency fund took quite the hit. But the difference was, is that we knew how to strategize and how to build that back up. There was no longer this like, oh, what are we going to do? We don't have a safety net anymore. It was like, okay, we know how to rebuild this. We know how to repair it. We've got this. And we just hit the ground running from there. And so the daredevil doesn't, you know, either doesn't have that safety net or their safety net is inadequate.
I love the distinction between those two things. A daredevil is like that old Bon Jovi song, like just living on a yes, prayer, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I think the third is, I feel like you're looking at me. Like the whole time I was reading the third one, I'm like, is Jesse talking just to me? The Spender.
Yes. The Spender, which I think everybody can be a spender, even as savers. I think that everybody can be a spender, you know, especially during the holiday season. Like we just get into that habit of spending money. And that's why I think it's so important that, you know, whether or not you truly are a spender, like my husband, he loves to spend money. Like it gives him a sense of satisfaction, I guess, is maybe the better word to use for spending money. Like he likes to be able to have that ability to spend money. Whereas me, I like having big bank accounts. That makes me feel better. You know, and there's no right or wrong answer there. It's just some people like to spend money more than others. But, you know, when you catch yourself and you're in that habit of spending money, the key is to find your trigger. What is triggering you to like want to spend money? For me, sometimes like emotionally, like I can be an emotional spender. I'm like, ooh, you know, like I'm dealing with all these big emotions. I don't know how to do it. So retail therapy, just buy, you know, some new shoes or yeah. I'll buy this and I'll feel better. You know, and for my husband, it's like the great deal. He loves to chase a deal. And so when he can get a good deal on something, he will buy it. Not necessarily because he needs it, but because I got a good deal on
it's
it,
fantastic.
You know?
Fantastic.
Exactly. And so like the key there is to, when you're going and you're making a purchase, like listen to the justification you're giving yourself. There are going to be times where it's a legitimate need and you actually need that, whatever it is, but pay attention to the justifications that you give, because that will tell you what your trigger is, like what's causing you to spend money, especially during the holiday season when things kind of go on autopilot. It's really important to pay attention to that because, you know, especially with social media and everything, our ads are so curated to everything that we do every single day that it can be hard because it's almost like those ads are truly speaking to us. And so
they are.
It's a little creepy.
It is so amazing. Gertrude from our team and I took a MIT course in social media back in June.
Oh, wow.
And one of the things our professor did was had a scroll through our Facebook feed and just look at the ads. And,
oh, gosh.
And he asked everybody, and this is scary, Jesse. Yes. Everybody in our class, he said, how do you like the ads that Facebook serves you? And I scrolled through and I went, I love all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like I didn't like it. I loved it. It was totally quirky stuff that I probably didn't need, but it just fed my creativity and who I was and hit me from all these different cool places. Like these companies, we have given them so many permissions that we don't know about on our phones
yes.
and following us around that, man, when you say they're speaking to you, they yes. are speaking to you.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. It is well curated ads to us. I mean, because like back when, you know, when I was growing up, like we didn't have control over the ads that
right.
we saw.
Yeah.
You know, they just were whatever was on TV or played on the radio. And but now it's like the ads are just like coming at us and they're just so meticulous about trying to get you to click on that button and buy. And even Instagram now is like offering it, like offered me like 20% off any of the shops that I follow. So exactly. They're encouraging you to spend and spend and spend. And I'm not demonizing them. I mean, they're running a business
sure.
too, you know, but we just have to be aware of those things, because if we're not aware, then we're going to get caught in those ads and whatever our spending trigger is, whether it's, oh, looking for the deal or, oh, I'm emotionally not feeling so great right now because I'm looking at my phone at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever it is. We just need to be aware of that so we can protect ourselves.
Absolutely. I mean, these stores, to your point, have a plan which shows how much you should too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
if we walk into a store without a plan, we know a Target is set up to get us to go out with more stuff. Like, you know that ahead of time. These people yes. have meetings and committees and consultants who set up this store to maximize yes. the amount of money coming out of my wallet.
True story. One of my clients before I became a stay-at-home mom, I worked for an engineering company down in Atlanta, and one of my clients was actually Target. And so, yes, trust me, they do curate their stores around keeping you in that store as long as possible.
I think right after we first met, we talked about that one time.
We did.
I was going to say, that story totally rings a bell. The last one on our list here is the avoider.
Yes, the avoider. I was really bad at being an avoider for a really long time. That is someone who doesn't plan for their future, mostly in the form of retirement, but it's someone who kind of just thinks like, oh, that 20, 30, 40 years is so far away. I don't need to worry about it, and doesn't actually plan for their future and take the necessary steps to make sure that, you know, their 70-year-old self is able to retire and do what they want to do in retirement. And I always tell people, like, really picture your 70-year-old self and ask yourself, what do you want to be doing at 70? Mm. Do you want to be working? Because I mean, some people do. My husband is one of them. He's somebody who, like, unless if something horrible happens to him, he is going to have to work every single day because he just wants to. Like,
yeah, that's me.
Gives him purpose. Yeah, yeah, that gives him purpose. You know, but that's not everybody. Some people want to sit on a beach all day long. Some people want to be baking cookies with their grandkids. Whatever it is, like, you have to understand that when you're saving for retirement, you're saving for that future person. You're not saving for who you are today. You're sacrificing now. So then that way later, you can do that thing you really want to do when you're 70 years old.
I love that. If I don't pay attention to it today, imagine how bad it's going to stink tomorrow. Like, if I want to avoid it today, I'm just hurting that person, which is
exactly
a great way to think about it. And you also say we can be multiples of these. We're not just one. Well, you even talked about that. You've been different ones of these different times.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, sometimes all at one time, we can be all four of them.
Your first action when you were getting out of debt was just to go sell some stuff.
Yes. That was my first action. Yep.
Immediately. And this was kind of before the internet was big, but you went and took out a camera. And actually, you didn't have internet at your house. You went to your mom's house to sell it.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And sold a bunch of stuff. But I think that, do you like that? I mean, is that a great strategy for all of us? Just do something, get some action started, get moving.
Yes, absolutely. I think that just even small actions, whatever it is, whether or not selling stuff, just any type of action that you can take very quickly will get that ball rolling. And sometimes that's all you need is that momentum to get you going. And for me, it was ransacking my house and pulling everything out that I didn't need or want and taking pictures of it with my Fuji camera so I could upload pictures and sell it on eBay and Craigslist, because at the time, Facebook Marketplace wasn't around, and to do it that way. And we still, to this day, we do that all the time, me and my husband. If there's just something that we're like, you know, we're cleaning out the workshop and there's something that we're like, this isn't holding value for our family anymore, but it still has value, like it's still usable, we'll clean it up, take pictures of it, and sell it for what we can, and, you know, apply that to whatever current goal we have going on.
I love that at the end of the year, Cheryl and I started doing that, which is going through closets and going, how much of the stuff didn't come out of the closet in the last 12 months?
Yeah.
And if it didn't come out of the closet, why am I holding onto it? Like, really, just asking why.
And too, like, I know for some people, like, and some people are really frugal minded, so they have a hard time like letting go of stuff. And so I think that if that's you, if you're really struggling to like let go of something, because you're like, no, like I, you know, paid X, Y, and Z for this, I need to keep this, or I might need this. Like for us, we set a threshold, a dollar amount. Oh. Anything that is less than $300, if we have not used it in a year, it goes.
I love that.
Anything more than $300 where we're like, we may need this.
Sure.
Then we'll be like, okay, well, we'll just hold on to it a little bit longer because we may end up needing it. But anything less than $300 that hasn't been used in a year, it's gone.
That's fantastic. I'll tell you what worked for me too, was thinking about this thing sat in my closet for the last year and somebody could have been using this.
Yeah.
And if I really need it again in the future, I can go buy it again. Like that's on the table that I could. I probably won't though, you know?
Absolutely. And especially right now, I feel like it's like the best time to clean out your house and your closets because people need things that they can't get right now because of all the delays and, you know, and inflation and everything else that's going on. Like right now is the prime time to sell some of our stuff because people need it and they actually want it. So they'll pay you for it and come get it.
I love your quick start budget. I'm not going to get into it, but for people that are afraid of the big hole budget, Jesse has a way to get started that I absolutely love. And once again, a way to spring into action and get things moving. You also share these sometimes, by the way, on your Instagram account. You should follow Jesse on Instagram. It's a lot of fun following her. Even when, by the way, there are plenty of times when you're exasperated mom on Instagram, and I've seen those moments, but you always have a way, and I find this incredibly annoying. You find a way of being exasperated mom, like glasses half full at the same damn time, and it drives me crazy. I'm like, how is she so happy and so clearly at the end of her rope at the same time? I have no idea. The book is called Getting Good with Money, Pay Off Your Debt, and Find a Life of Freedom Without Losing Your Mind. And I'm assuming it's available everywhere, right?
Yes, as of yesterday, it is.
How great is that, by the way?
I'm so excited. It's a little nerve-wracking and scary at the same time, but I'm really excited. I truly hope that it will help many people, especially, you know, that exasperated mom that I was on that spring day where I realized that we were broke. I really hope that it ends up in the hands of another mom who's felt that, or someone who's had their debit card or their credit card declined at the grocery store and it's had to rely on the very nice gentleman behind them to buy groceries.
and we'll have a link to it, by the way, on our show notes page at stackybenjamins.com. Also in our 201 newsletter, stackybenjamins.com/201. I feel like you're somebody I don't get to talk to enough. Thank you so much for hanging out for a bit in the basement and talking about getting good with money. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Hey, this is Joe Crane, host of Veteran on the Move podcast. And when I'm not helping veterans transition to entrepreneurship,
I'm stacking Benjamins.
Some great lessons there from Jesse OG. And I think lesson one for all of us is you start from where you are. You can't feel the guilt. You have to start from where you are and realize that instead of being somebody who sees themselves as a failure who can't do it, see yourself as a problem solver who now can pivot. I was speaking to the woman behind Inspired Budget the other day, Allison Baggerly, for her podcast. And she had a great point about budget. She's like, if you get halfway through the month and you've messed up your budget, create a micro budget that's just the second half of the month. And instead of being the person 2 weeks in who wrecked their budget, you are now somebody that, yeah, made a mistake, but yeah, now
start over.
Yeah, can get it together again and can have this big boomerang. So good. Thanks to Jesse for coming down to the basement. But seriously, I got to feel like, OG, when you're meeting with people, especially in that first meeting that you have with them or any financial planner has, there's got to be people got to come in with a bunch of baggage, a bunch of, well, I know I'm not where I should be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the reality is, of course, is you just have to make a new plan. What you've done hasn't gotten the results that you're looking for. So now you have to do something a little different. I mean, it's no different than exercise or, you know, your diet or fitness or whatever. You know, if you go, I'm going to try the diet craze where all I eat is sugar every day, that may not get you where you want to go. And so you have to try something different. Same thing with like kind of doing that partially throughout the month. If you sneak a donut in the morning, do you just go, well, this day's shot, I should probably eat, you know? No, you just say, okay, I'll have a...
That's exactly what happens.
I was going to say, I think a lot of people do. They're like, oh, okay.
Well, this day's gone because I had one donut, yep. So I might as well just make the whole day a cheat day. Yeah, cheat meals. That's what we're supposed to
do. I might as well have a dozen. Meals. If I'm going to have one, I might as well have a dozen.
Well, there is some truth in that, but... Yeah. Don't extend it to your lunch.
Hey, let's throw with Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they put what you value first.
Doug's here. He can do it.
I can do what?
How many years have we been doing this?
What happens when we go to Haven?
The two things you value most.
The two things I value most. I don't know. A lice-free head of hair. And a good pedicure.
It's your loved ones and your time, but it, man, if you've had the pedicure, it makes it easier to be. Yeah.
I got to argue with you there.
Barefoot and fancy free. With
Have you ever had a pedicure?
It's why they made buying quality term life insurance. It's actually simple. Head to stackybenjamins.com/havenlife now for a free quote. Their application is simple. It's online. You're going to get this stuff done. Affordable prices and all issued by their parent company, Mass Mutual. So it's not a company that was just begun. It's more than 160 years old and you know, they're going to be there.
We've only just begun.
Oh boy. 160 years old. You think they're singing that over at Mass Mutual?
Well, that's how old the song is. So yeah, probably.
Probably. Remember this song from when our company was just born? Yeah. Today we're going to throw out the Haven Lifeline to Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Joe and OG. Brian from Buffalo calling. I know that nothing in life is certain except death, taxes, and learning nothing from this podcast, but I did have a question regarding taxes and my HSA account. I have about a $15,000 HSA account from a previous employer. Within this HSA account, I can invest and even purchase individual shares with no commission and minimal fees. I understand that HSAs are triple tax advantage on contributions, growth, and distributions. I'm just unsure if there's any tax when it comes to the capital gains and whether there's any implications on long-term versus short-term sales, as well as taxes on dividends. Are there any other tax concerns I should be aware of regarding this type of account, such as wash sale rules? Thanks again for all your help. And as far as size goes, I'm an extra large. Ego, that is. And a small t-shirt. Thanks.
Wow. Oh, that was good.
You're my boy, Blue.
That was fantastic.
Me too.
Right. It was fantastic, Brian. And Gertrude will send you a code. Thanks for the question. HSA's wonderful things, triple tax-free, OG. But are there any tax concerns? First of all, let's go through his initial questions. When you sell a stock and it's outside of a tax shelter, you have short-term sale rules and long-term sale rules. Are there any of those inside an HSA if he's selling?
Nope.
Wash sales. If he sells a stock and then he buys that stock later. Outside of an IRA, he has to wait 30 days or he's not going to get any good tax treatment there. Any wash sale rule inside of an HSA?
Well, because you're not getting to benefit from the loss, then there's no wash sale issue, except for the fact that technically you're not allowed to own the position or purchase a new position in any accounts. So people do it and there's not like a real easy way to track it. So let's say that you have 100 shares of Apple in your brokerage account and it's down 10%. So you want to sell it, but you actually want to own Apple. You're like, I'd prefer to own it. You can buy it. Well, let me rephrase. You're not supposed to buy it in your IRA, but people do because there's not the same reporting. You know, when if you sell it, you're supposed to be out of it for 30 days.
Gotcha. So you don't have that issue. And then are there any others? Are there any tax rules that he has to really worry about?
Nope.
I think there might be one, which is if before 65, Brian, if you take money out of it, it needs to be for qualified expenses, healthcare expenses, or there will be a tax penalty. Correct, OG?
Yeah. I mean, so the play is to accumulate all of your health expenses and then start doling that out to yourself, right, as reimbursements once you get toward retirement. And beyond retirement, once you get past 65, then kind of all bets are off. So if you need the money before that, as long as it's for health expense, then there's no taxes or penalties due. If you just take it out to spend it on a big screen TV, which is not a terrible idea considering the Super Bowl's coming up, then
a big screen TV that you'll share with the OG family.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to send it to me, that would be fantastic.
Exactly.
Then that's an issue.
Can you see that in the AITA subreddit for, I didn't send my favorite podcaster a TV. Am I a jerk?
Yeah. I don't need a TV. I'm good. I was kidding.
Right over here.
There's another guy here who's not kidding.
75 inches wouldn't be frowned upon.
We made it 73 inches, and then we said, we're not stopping there. We're going to add two more.
Thanks to you, Mr. TV guy.
You knew how big that wall was. I made a TV that fit every inch of it.
Nope.
Big thanks to Brian for the question. If you've got a question for us, stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. HSA's fantastic vehicles. If you have one available, I think I would dig in and begin looking at how can I most effectively use an HSA. And in our newsletter, the 201, we have a great discussion about HSAs. If you want to begin getting the 201 on them, if you want to dive deeper. StackyBenjamins.com/201 for that. All right. That's going to do it for today, everybody. You are now ready to begin the second half of your week. Congratulations. We're all downhill from here, unless you're a weekend worker. And then we're closing in on the starting line, which is also great. A lot of people to thank. Doug's going to do that in a second. But last but not least, if you're somebody who has wants to dream bigger in 2022 and beyond, OG and his team are working with new clients. So head to stackybenjamins.com/OG, and that's where you will find their calendar to jump on and begin that process. All right. That's going to do it for today. Doug, what should we have learned today? Actually, hold on. I forgot one thing. We got a new contest, guys. We got a brand new contest for signups to the 201. And it's not for you to sign up. If you haven't signed up, you will get an entry for signing up. And we're going to automatically give everybody who has signed up for the 201 one entry. But we have a referral program for the 201. So if you know somebody who needs this newsletter that lately has been getting a lot of press about how great it is.
Yeah.
You send three people our way, you get stickers. You send five people our way, you get more. And actually, when you send three people our way, you know what happens too? You're in on a quarterly podcast episode that we make just for this group of people in the 201. So our referral program, you can learn all about it at stackingbenjamins.com/201. However, we're going to now, just for the next month, OG, we're giving away a Sonos One speaker.
Ooh.
which each of us have one of those, at least one. I have several. It's just a beautiful sound out of that. And we want to reward those people. You know what we're going to do? For five other people, give away our favorite board game about money, Franklin's Fortune, which we had the designer of Franklin's Fortune on the show on our annual board game episode on Black Friday. You can go back and listen to that. But we have a lot of fun playing that. We're going to give away five copies of that for second through six. So we'll be drawing that in a month. StackingBenjamins.com/201.
Joe, if signups are a little slow for the 201, it might be because you're waiting until an hour into the show to prep to promo it. You think anybody's still listening?
Well, listen, let me tell you this. This is what I don't like. I don't like people to talk about this stuff at the start because the people that are more likely to refer us are people that are hanging out with us here at the end.
Oh, nice save.
I don't want a new listener to be like, really? I haven't even heard what you got yet. Why would I refer people to you?
I think a new listener would be awfully interested in a Sonos One.
Well, they hey, this podcast I've never heard before and I'm just starting. I can get a say. Why don't you go down this dark alley? Yes.
I do think that.
Yeah. I'm super excited about it. By the way, Brett is our number one stacker, tearing this thing up. You could be more like Brett. Brett's in the lead. We've barely talked about our referral program, and Brett is stacker with some people on his tail. But Brett, you're helping your friends, man. All right, stackingbenjamins.com/201 there. All right, that's going to finally... Now I'm done, Doug.
That was a nice short little promo. That was good. Nice. Way to keep it really tight and concise.
Succinct. Yes. Succinct. Yes. Brevity is my middle name. All right, Doug, what should we have learned today?
Well, Joe, first, feeling shame about your finances will only keep you from addressing them. Keep your head up and keep moving. Second, we've all made mistakes. In fact, OG has made each of them three times just for you to make sure you get it. I mean, that leather vest and fedora Joe's wearing right now is also a mistake and nobody's even told him. But the big lesson... No matter how much you spend, don't expect your friends to appreciate it. Has anyone even thanked me for the diesel fuel scented cologne I've been wearing all show just to make this place smell better? No. Thanks to Jesse Fearon for helping us out of the debt shame swamp today. Her book, Getting Good With Money, is available everywhere you shouldn't be spending money. Yeah, unless it's on her book. Our show is written in part by our writer, Paulette Perhatch, who helps writers power their words, their work, and their earning potential with her Powerhouse Writers Coaching Program, which starts today, January 19th at 7:30 Eastern Time, 4:30 Pacific. Find out if you can still get a spot at www.powerhousewriters.com. Boy, that seems pretty early. 4:30 in the morning, Pacific Time? It's going to be tough to get people to sign up for that, I think. Oh, PM. Oh, I just got it. I figured it out. Okay. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2022, and is created by Josal Sehi. Our producer is Karen Rapine. The show is written by the brilliant Paulette Perhatch with help from Joe and Doc G from the Earn and Invest podcast. After you listen to our show, check out the 201 Deep Dives written by our website manager and blog editor, Brooke Miller. You'll find the 411 on all things money at the 201. Just go to stackingbenjamins.com/201. Once we bottle up all this goodness, we ship it to our engineer, the amazing Steve Stewart. Steve helps the rest of our team sound nearly as good as I do right now. Want to chat with friends about the show later? Mom's friend Gertrude is our social media coordinator and the room mother in our Facebook group called The Basement. So, say hello when you see us posting online. Here's a weird fact. Both she and Tina Eichenberg are never in the same room at the same time. To join all the basement fun with other stackers, type stackingbenjamins.com/basement. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show. Not only should you not take advice from these dorks, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor.
Welcome to the after show. This is a part of the show that doesn't exist. We were talking about, in preparation for this, the different shows that we've been watching, and we talked in one fell swoop about a couple that I've been watching, which are Around the World in 80 Days and Boba Fett. OG, you haven't really been watching much.
No, we recorded all of the Yellowstones, but we haven't watched any of them yet.
But Doug, you and I have both been watching some stuff from Nordic countries. You saw a movie called Trapped.
Well, it's not a movie. It's a whole, in fact, there's two seasons of it. Each season is based on a different crime, 10 or, you know, 12 episodes a season. And it's Icelandic. It's called Trapped. And it's beautiful to look at because it's in Iceland. And it's a little bit moody and slow, but it's compelling. It really somehow keeps you watching. It's not fast paced at all, but it's structured well enough and written well enough that it really keeps you engaged. And in Iceland, and this is probably true of a lot of Nordic countries, they sort of flow back and forth between native language and English. And so it's, the subtitles are just sort of built in. You don't even have to turn it on your on Amazon or on Netflix, but they'll flow back and forth, but we really like it. So it's called Trapped. And I think there's a few of those out there now from different sort of serial crime dramas that are all being produced in that Nordic region.
I watched last night, episode one of a show called Anxious People. And I'm not really sure what it's trying to be, because on one hand, it's a robber on the loose, but there's kind of this slapstick comedy thing going on between a father, son, who are the cops who are chasing them. And so on one hand, it's a comedy. On the other hand, it's not. It's only 30 minutes long, each episode, which I thought it was going to be a straight up comedy. And it was more serious than I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't completely serious. So
like, it doesn't know what it wants to be.
Yeah, but it's weird enough that I'm very intrigued. And I got done, Cheryl and I both got done with the first episode and said, we're excited to watch the second one. There was also a Holiday series that was two seasons long, and I'm not going to get the name here. And I've been searching for it for a while, but it is from Norway.
Also a country known for their slapstick humor.
Yeah. And this is one of the best for people, you know, we're past the season, but man, when we were looking for a good holiday theme series, and I wish I could get the name. I even went back through my Netflix, watch it again, Q, and I can't find it. But it's a story about a woman. She's tired of the fact that her family gives her hell about having a boyfriend at Christmas. So she just lies and says, yeah, I have a new boyfriend and I'm bringing him to Christmas dinner. And so then it's this quest to get a boyfriend, which you can tell already where that leads. Mm-hmm. Good series. Wish I could remember the name of it. Isn't that great?
Only there was a thing you could do on your phone to find people to date.
Do you know what I'm looking for now? I'm looking for the next good documentary.
Mm.
What a good business documentary. That's what I'm looking for.
Have you watched the McDonald's one? Why can't I think of it? With Michael Keaton, the founder?
Yeah, that's not a documentary, but that...
No,
yeah.
It's a docudrama. I agree.
Yeah, but, yeah.
And then actually the one is probably a year ago that I watched it. Goodness. It's about the... It's not really business, like how we built the business, but it's about the scam of the Monopoly, McDonald's Monopoly game. That's a really good documentary.
I haven't seen that one.
OG, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I didn't see it.
That one's really good. Yeah. Why can't I come up with the name of it? But it's whatever, like, you know, six or seven episodes long. And the famous Monopoly game at McDonald's where you peel little pieces off your fries or your soda cup, it was all a scam. But they didn't know it. McDonald's had no idea that it was a scam. It was an inside job by the company they subbed out the production of the pieces to. That was really good.
I thought that, you know, people aren't going to think this is a business documentary, but Doug, you saw this, Drive to Survive, the Formula One thing. Oh. I thought was phenomenal, business against business. Right?
I would agree. I think you can call that a business documentary in the same way that Moneyball is a business book. I mean, Michael Lewis set out to write a business book when he created Moneyball, and it just, there's so much context about baseball that, you know, baseball fans read it that way. F1 or racing fans could watch Drive to Survive and think it's a racing documentary, but I agree with you. I think that easily could be considered a business. You get more behind the scenes about how they're doing contracts with their drivers
yes.
and sponsorships and yeah. the management of the team as much as you get racing. In fact, the great thing is I wasn't an F1 fan or even really a racing fan before watching that. They edit the exciting parts of the race and compress it down to a couple of minutes. You get all the excitement of that. And then all the rest of it is the other stuff we just talked about.
And it really is just watching people perform at their job. And you know, behind the scenes that this guy's got a contract online.
Oh yeah.
Or that, you know, there's something going on that's worker against worker, you know, yeah. for, and so the drama that they create, by the way, I read that, and I don't know if it's the same company that's involved, but that has done so well that IndyCar is getting one as well. I know NASCAR has something similar on a different platform, but yeah, watch all the spinoffs now coming. Mm-hmm. All right, time for us to head for the Sizzler so Doug can let us buy him a beer for the 47th time.
Yes. Yeah, no kidding.
Our show is written in part by our writer, Paulette Perhatch, who helps writers power their words, their work, and their earning potential with her Powerhouse Writers Coaching Program, which starts today, January 19th at 7:30 Eastern Time, 4:30 Pacific. Find out if you can still get a spot at www.powerhousewriters.com. Boy, that seems pretty early. 4:30 in the morning, Pacific time? It's going to be tough to get people to sign up for that, I think. Oh, PM. Oh, I just got it. I figured it out. Okay.
Do you need to redo that?
No, I was just f***ing around.
Oh, okay.
You You thought I really didn't know? Oh my God. Was that why your hand was on your forehead the whole time I was saying that?
Well, I hope you got a lot out of today's episode. But one thing that we talked about a little bit today, but we talk about a lot, is you got to have good partners on your team, Stackers. And you know what? Navy Federal Credit Union could be that partner, because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. And aren't those two of the big tenets, right? Have a debt strategy, earn more, save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. I think that's the coolest certificate. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project? Maybe you want to consolidate debt. Well, as you're putting your plan together, you want to also have a debt strategy, right? And you could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Don't get in over your head with debt. Make sure you have a great strategy and then take out debt as you need it. And Navy Federal's options certainly give you the flexibility to help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, equal housing lender, membership required, terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.